Okay, yesterday we left off with some rather disturbing problems here. One was that Rebbe Meir was Seisar himself, because we have in the Machlokas of Rebbe Meir and the Chachomim, in the Braita over here, it's Rebbe Meir who says that it's Mishar Shaitan in Tovlin. Tovlin, first of all, itself doesn't make any sense, because Tefillah, of course, for a Tvoyom is Be'emtza Hayom, so to speak. I mean, it's broad daylight. How could we possibly say that that's the Zman of Shechiva? Furthermore, earlier Rebbe Meir was the one who said that the Shiur is defined by Bnei Adam that are Nichlasim La'achol. Now, how in the world did that turn into something that had to do with the Zman of Tevila during the day? That was one problem we had. Rebbe Eliezer contradicted himself, because in the Mishnah, assuming that the Mishnah is meant to be one piece, the opening, he was the one who said, Mi'imatai Torin et Shema, to the Rebbe Eliezer at the end. Because Mashmah Yoz Mishah Shaka Anim Nechasim La'achol B'Trumatam, which would have been the equivalent of the as we said earlier, Seita Kochavim. And yet we know in the Braita, it was Rebbe Eliezer, and he's the one who began the whole discussion in the Braita over here. So it was Rebbe Eliezer who was the one who gave us the Shiurim of Oni, not of the Shkia, not of Seita Kochavim, because he said it had to do with the time in which you'd have to start keeping Shabbos and Erev Shabbos, and that was, of course, at least it's a Suffolk, the time of Shkia, Vedash Moshe. So that was a problem. We had left those problems hanging. So we're up to Omar Mar, four lines up from the bottom of base on the base. Today's daf is daf Gimel, Meseches Brachos. Omar Mar. Amalei Rabbi Yehuda Valoko Anim Miba'od Yom Him Tovlim. And so in the middle of discussion of Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda says to him, I understand what you're talking about. How could the Tzman of Shechiva be in the middle of the day? In other words, even agreeing, I can't believe this. Today it's for sure over 20 degrees.
Cooling down soon.
Okay. So even if we want to go so far as to say, as we've seen consistently throughout the Sunya, that there's no such thing as Kriyat Shema B'Yom and no such thing as Kriyat Shema B'Layla, there's only a din of B'Shoch B'Cho Uv Kumercha. You may be able to extend that B'Shoch B'Cho Uv Kumercha a little bit in one direction or another, but certainly not to go, Yom. What are we going to say that B'Shoch B'Cho is talking about reading the Zman B'Shach Shchiva in the middle of the day? Therefore, Tainas Rebbe Yehuda to Rebbe Meir makes no sense. Halokonim about Yom Yom Tovli. That's a good point, says Rosh HaKomalei Rebbe Yehuda to Rebbe Meir. What's Rebbe Meir's solution to that? Rabbi Meir says, Hakikar Marley, look. Mi Savadana Ben HaShemoshot Didach Kamina. What do you think? I'm talking about your Ben HaShemoshot. I know what your sheet is, which is at the end of Nida. Machlokas Rabbi Yosi and Rabbi Yehuda as to the length of Ben HaShemoshot, correct? So according to Rabbi Yehuda, Ben HaShemoshot is a significant amount of time. A Chatzimil that comes out of the Gemara Shabbos and Pesachim. That's a lot of time. In other words, between the time of the Suffolk, the beginning of the Suffolk, and actual Tzeta Kol Chavim, when it gets dark, you have quite a few minutes. Precisely, I would define it as half of 21 minutes or 18 minutes. But in any event, you'd be right to ask me, assuming that I agreed with you, but I don't agree with you about the length of Ben HaShemoshot. Ana Ben HaShemoshot Rabbi Yosi Kamina. Yom Rabbi Yosi Ben HaShemoshot Kerev Ayin, Zenichnas Vezeyotzei V'yev Shalom Odolav. If I hold back Rabbi Yossi, then remember Rabbi Yossi's Ben HaShemoshot. First of all, I mean, there was even a sheet that says that it begins after the end of Rabbi Yehuda's Ben HaShemoshot. But in any event, it's just a blink of the eye before actual Tzeta Kochavim. So in order for a Kohen to make sure that he would have Harif Shemen, as long as he did the Tefillah a minute before, that would also be enough to extend the Din of Shechiva into the last moments of three Tzeta Kochavim is lo nora. And therefore, you can't ask me that it's illogical. Now, forget about it being illogical. It's contradictory, though, isn't it? I mean, Kasha to Rebbe Meir, the Rebbe Meir. I mean, first Rebbe Meir said, Mishar Shebnei Adam Nichlasim Le'achol Pitan Barvei Shabbatot. Here, he says that the Shiur is Mishat Tefillah, which is before Ben HaShemoshot. The Gemara earlier proved that Bnei Adam's, the Shiur of Bnei Adam, is later than the Shiur of Kohen, meaning the Shiur of Kohen of Ben HaShemoshot. So here he's going back three steps, essentially. Because we have Shkia, we have Pre-Shkia, which is the Tefillah of Kohanim, even if you want to say it's Rabbi Yossi, it's a little bit before. Then we have Mishar Shel Kohanim Nichlasim Le'achol, which is Tzeta Kochavim. Then we have Mishar Shel Bnei Adam Nichlasim Le'achol Pitan Barvei Shabbatot. Now how did he say the first of those and the last of those. I mean, they're four steps apart. Trachonite, Liber Rebbe Meir, there's no answer to that. In fact, we have two different reports from the Beis HaMidrash of Rebbe Meir, this person who sheet. Kasha de Rabbi Eliezer, or the Rebbe Eliezer. How about the problem Rebbe Eliezer? I mean, Rebbe Eliezer apparently is the author of our Mishnah that says, Me'emat HaKodim Kriyat Shema, and it says, Misha Shakanim Nechassim Lachol B'Trumatam. How did he now change his mind to say, Misha Shakidah Shayom Berev Shabbatot, which is Shkia? There's certainly a difference between Shkia and Seta Kochavim. No answer to that either. I mean, if you believe that the mission is Rebbe Eliezer, then we're forced to conclude that it's straight on Ayalib the Rebbe Eliezer. I mean, obviously, the Braita and the Mishnah don't agree. Or, there's a simple solution. Read the Mishnah separated into two sections, as we saw yesterday. Section A. Me'imat Aikon Kriyat Shema Baravin Misha She'akonim L'chassim L'chob B'Trumatan. Fini. Section B. Until when? Ad. 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 So Rebbe Eliezer is just saying Ad. He didn't agree necessarily with the Tanakhama of the Mishnah that was presented as a Stam Mishnah. Well, we know that there's three different shittas at the end of the mission. So what's wrong if we add Rebbe Eliezer to the Chachomim and Rebbe Shimon Gamliel? And Rebbe Gamliel. I mean, the first part is not necessarily connected at all. The question, however, from all of the shiurim that appear in the Gemara so far, and the truth is we're going to see that there's more to discuss later on, but the problem from the shiurim over here is the minhag. The minhag doesn't seem to fit with any of this, because the minhag, certainly the minhag in most balabatim shuls, is that you daven basically ma'ariv very early. You come daven and you come ma'ariv. But that's usually done before all of the shiurim. So how does that work? So Rashi says, amazingly, it doesn't work. You're not really Yotzei Kriyat Shema. And actually because since everybody reads Kriyat Shema before he goes to sleep anyway, so, you know, you're Yotzei with Kriyat Shema al Amita. It's a tremendous problem. This does this point. What do you mean you're Yotzei with Kriyat Shema al Amita? First of all, you only read the first parak. So why read Tzaymet Lechatzchila to be Yotzei only with the first parak? I mean, you should have to read the whole thing. And then how could we possibly have Birchot Kriyat Shema, Kavua, on the Kriyat Shema that we're not Yotzei B'chlal? Why should you say Birchot Kriyat Shema on the Kriyat Shema al Mitato, according to this? We're going to be called Veya, things like this? And then, I mean, he's got other questions in the Gemara later on that we haven't seen yet. Now, the teretz that Tosfos offers originally, the Rabbeinu Tam, I want to discuss with you later, because we haven't gotten to the requisite shitas in the Gemara to be able to really discuss. However, the other Balei HaTosfos are docher Rabbeinu Tam. They don't like his pshat, and we'll discuss that when we get to the sugi of the relationship of tefillah to Kriyat Shema. So far, we don't see any such relationship. So to discuss the Rabbeinu Tam here would be premature, because he talks about the whole thing in terms of the connections, which we haven't seen. But the re in Tosfos says that it's impossible to say what Rashi is saying. Actually, certainly Kriyat Shema, the Beit HaKnesset, is the Iker Kriyat Shema, which is why we Birchot Kriyat Shema on it, and why we don't have to say all of the three before. And apparently, we paskin not like the Mishnah. So we have the Shita over here of Rebbe Eliezer, Misha Shekidesh Hayom. That's talking about Shkia. So if that's the case, the early Ma'ariv is post-Shkia. If it's post-Shkia, even though it's not dark yet, according to Rebbe Eliezer, it'd be Yotzei Kriyat Shema. And so, he concludes, it must be that we are actually so meh on that. The davening we'll talk about, but Tosis takes for granted that there's a relationship between Kriyat Shema and Tefillah, as we'll see later on in the Gemara. That's something that's already the next level of complexity. We're talking only about Kriyat Shema and our Sugya as if it exists as a separate entity. Then it says the Mishnah, the Rebbe Eliezer Shita, Ad Sof HaShmurah HaRishona. Ad Sof HaShmurah HaRishona is a rather vague way of defining an hour on the clock. I mean, what does that mean? At first, I didn't even know how many of these Ashmurot there are. And Ashmurah is still preserved in English, because the way you tell time is with a watch, which is, of course, an Ashmurah, right? So Asof Ashmurah HaRishona is actually until the end of the first watch. And that's because that's the way that actually you knew about. You had a town crier, and he was part of a Shemirah on the city, and that was, it's 12 o'clock and all is well. All is well is the Shemirah, so the watch now became the way in which we tell time. But nonetheless, it sure isn't announcing it's 2 a.m. So in what way, I mean, what's he saying? What is an Ashmura? First of all, what does he hold? I mean, we don't even know how many Mishmarot there are. Ika Saba, we'll see later on, there's a machloket in the Gemara, whether the Laila is split into three Mishmarot, or whether the Laila is split into four Mishmarot. But either way, I mean, Ika Saba Shalosh Mishmarot Avi Laila. If he holds it split three ways, so Leimad Arba'a Shaot, why doesn't he say? You know, until 4 hours in the night, that's the way they would count time, starting the clock at zero at the beginning of the night, and ending it at 12 at the end of the night, and then starting once again at zero at the beginning of the day. Right? So it's the hours are the same as our hours in terms of the numbers, but they would be 12 sections of the day and the night. It would not necessarily be equal. I mean, sure, if it's around the time of the equinox, so then it's equal. But if not, it would be very unequal. So you have an hour in the daytime being 90 minutes and an hour in the evening being 40 minutes, you know, or vice versa. But it was always 1/12. So you want to split up the night now by Mishmarot. But you could simply tell me, instead of confusing me, what time on the watch it is. And so instead of talking about the watch. And therefore, if he holds Shalosh Mishmarot Havi Laila, he should have said, until 4 o'clock. So it's 3 o'clock. And he's going to split it up to 12 hours now into threes. We're going to see later on that Rebbe Eliezer's Shita clearly is the Laila is split into three divisions. And these divisions are, according to Rashi, essentially metaphysical divisions in which the Hanhaga of the world and the Malachim and the Shemayim and so on are split into periods in which there's different kochot that are in charge of the way in which the world is conducted. So you have different mishmarot of malachim that are giving shira takarash baruch hu, and so on and so forth. And those are the mishmarot we're referring to. What Rebbe Eliezer is trying to do by giving us a time on the watch is to turn the watch into a physical phenomenon rather than a metaphysical phenomenon. So the reason that he talks about the watch is to actually provide you with a watch. And he's kamashulan the ika mishmarot berakia v'ika mishmarot ba'ara. He wants you to know the fact that Mishmarot have also an equivalence on the earth. By the way, not all of the Mefarshim, all of the Rishonim explain it the way I just did. Some learn that the Chiddush is the Mishmarot Barakiah as well. But this is a very straightforward shot in the Gemara to continue, if we learn it this way. V'alkol Mishmar Mishmar Yoshev HaKadosh Baruch Hu V'Shalei Ka'ari. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu responds to the changing of the guard with a scream about the Churban, or the roar about the Churban. Shneimar Hashem mimarom yishag, umimaon kotsho yiten kolo. Shaog yishag, again, shaog, we have three shagot then. Yishag, shaog yishag, al naveu on the Beit HaMikdash. The siman ledavar, to translate that mishmar into a phenomena that you could locate on, in your home, is that mishmarari shona chamor noer. The way to know you're in the first watch is that's the time of the brain of the donkeys out there. Of course, there's too much traffic noise for us to hear that anymore. But once upon a time, it was very, very clear here in Yerushalayim. And there's a dead silence at night. And that's what you heard, was Chamor Noer. Shniyak lo'avim tzoakim. The second mishmar, the dogs are barking. You still pick some of that up, even if you're not watching 101 Dalmatians. And shlishit tinoki onek mishadei imo. The third mishmar is the time in which you will find an infant nursing from its mother. Of course, you always find infants nursing from its mother to all the young parents in the room. But what this means, you'll find the infants nursing from the mother and then not going back to bed. Usually at least they'll fall asleep on you. No, but this is the end. You might as well get out of bed and give up. V'isham misaperet imbala. And it's a time in which people who are sleeping with each other will be talking with each other because they're both waking up. So, wait a minute. When are these times? Is he talking about this is a sign of the onset of a mishmar? Is this the time of the conclusion of the mishmar? I mean, he's not being very clear. First of all, what's the logic of providing us three points of reference? If he's talking about how to know the beginning, I don't need the name of the beginning of the first mishmar. It's very clear when the first mishmar begins, at nightfall. I mean, so you don't need to tell me when nightfall is. Okay, now it's nightfall. Now you want to know, okay, what's the end of the first mishmar? Okay, so I guess he means the end, right? No, because if it means the end, then what do I need the end of the last mishmar? That's daybreak. So it couldn't mean the end either. So what does he mean? So my question, Rebbe Eliezer, each chilat mishmarot kakashiv, chilat mishmarot shana, what do I need a simon for? Urtu, nightfall is the simon. Isof mishmarat kachashvat tzad. At the end of the mishmar, sof mishmarat chrona lamali. What do I need a sigana? Yamama, the simon for that is daybreak. What he's doing is, elachashiv, sof mishmarah rishona, tchilata mishmarah achrona, v'emtsa'ita, emtsa'ita. Clearly, what he's giving you is the simonim of significance to you, which is the end. At sof hashmarah rishona. Okay, what's the sof hashmarah rishona? That's donkey time. And what's the chatzos? The chatzos, that's the klavim tzoraking time. And what would be the beginning of the final mishmara, so you know soon it'll be daybreak in a few hours? Okay, that's the isha misaberti bala. The ibayit ema, or we could learn, kulu sof mishmarot kachashiv. Actually, the simen that he gives is a reference to the end of each mishmar. V'chi teima, and you'll ask me, I thought I just asked you that there's no point in giving the end of the last mishmar because anybody could see it's daybreak. Well, not if you live in Manhattan, you can't tell it's daybreak, right? So the chitim, you're going to ask me, achrona lo tzarech, why do I need a simen for daybreak? Can I just look out the window? What if there aren't any windows? Or what if there isn't any sun? So l'may nafkamina, l'mikre kriyashma, l'mandagoni, but by a kafir, somebody lives in Manhattan. Or even worse, he might live in Brooklyn, where he never sees the sun. So what does he do? How does he know what time is kriyashma? Lo yada zman kriyashma ema. Kivan di isha misaperet im ba'ala, v'tinok yonek mishadeim o leikum v'likret. He should know by just the phenomenon around him when people are stirring and babies are nursing and so on. It's time to get up and to say kriyat shema. Now, these two tirutzim, interestingly enough, I mean, they sound very theoretical, but they have nafkaminas la'alocha in terms of tikkun chatzot. Because if HaKadosh Baruch Hu is showing on the relevant moment of the Mishmar, then we understand the Reb Eliezer Simonim are for that relevance. The basis of the concept of Tikkun Chatzot and so on is the Midrashim that talk about being Mitzaim, one's own tefillot, with HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Sha'agot. There are the times that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is sensitive and is expressing his pain at the Churban. That is a time in which an individual in this world should feel that way and express his feeling, and that is a Tikkun, that's a Tikkun towards Geula. The question is, which teretz do we hold of? If we hold of the first teretz, then indeed there's chatzot. Because the emtsa ita turns out to be a special time in which we understand the sha'agaz on the chatzot. But if we go according to the last teretz in the Gemara, and it's interesting because that's what the Shulchan Aruch paskens. But if we go according to the last, let's see, no sekelim taina on him. I mean, the last shot in the Gemara gives no significance to chatzot at all. Because actually it's coming out that the simon is at the end. So then the time for the tikkunim would be the end of the first third, the second third, or right before dawn. But where would you get tikkun chatzot from? There's all types of discussion about that, because it's clear in the Zohar that the zman of chatzot per se is a zman of, that is open to tefillah. And then we'll see in Yonim of Chatzot actually later on this daf itself, that implies there's something unique about it. And therefore, you know, this becomes all the discussion. Well, if they would have had the Sefer HaZohar, they wouldn't have asked that kind of question, so on and so forth. You'll often find it, at the early stages of the Gili of the Sefer HaZohar. Continues the Gemara. Omer of Yitzchak bar Shmuel Mishmei Rav. Shalosh Mishmarot HaVilayla, Val Kol Mishmar Mishmar Yoshev HaKadosh Baruch Hu V'Shrei Ka'ari V'Omer. We didn't know what the Sha'agah was. Oy Levanim. Shabbaavonotehim, hecharafti et beiti, visarafti et echali, v'iglitim levein umot ha'olam. So his sha'agah is the sha'agah of frustration and pain about the idiotic nature of the korban. And it's only because of avonos that they have to suffer the korban anyway, and because of that I'm suffering the korban, and now they are left between the umas ha'olam. At the time of the Bayit HaRishon. See the chokmah, how he phrases the question. Taking for granted that the Bayit Sheni is still considered to be a Zman of Galut, which I like. I assume that's why you're saying it. Right, because it was never Mushlam, the Binyan. But the question isn't whether the nature of the Mishmar is necessarily Sha'agah. Maybe it's responsiveness. Then there's responsiveness to an Olam of Churban is Sha'agah. Responsiveness to an Olam of Binyan also has special Zmanim of Simcha. The same way the Tisha B'Av will be a Zman of Simcha. So these Mishmars, instead of a Sha'agah Litzara, would be a Sha'agah, so to speak, of Simcha. Or Shaga Kineged Oyvei Yisrael, and so on. So Tanya Amar Rabbi Yosi, Fa'am Achat, Hayiti Ma'alech Baderach, Menechnasti l'churva achat mechurvot Yerushalayim lehitpalel. So far, all we've seen is that there are mishmarot balayla. We don't know anything about the significance of mishmarot b'yom. From the following sugya, it's mashmar that there are mishmarot b'yom in which there's also a shaga. There's some rechayla that could say that what Rabbi Yossi reports on is keneged the tefilas b'yom, not really keneged mishmarot. Okay, but the parshas of the sugya is that this is a continuation of the shaga that we saw earlier. So he was on the road, and he goes into a broken down building of Yerushalayim in order to be mitpalel. And so, while he was in the churva, Eliyahu HaNavi comes and waits for him. Rashi learns that shamar means waits, in the sense of aviv shamar et hadavar, shomer emunim. So shomer meaning waiting for something that is important. Others learn shamar li ala petach means literally shamar, because we'll see later on that there's a problem of mazikim in a churva. And so in his standing there, he provided a shmira for Rabbi Yossi's tefillah. He waited there until I finished davening. He didn't bother me in the middle of tefillah. Actually, as a machlokas we shown him, whether the response of Shalom Alecha Rabbi or Mori is the response of Talmid L'Rav. Because it makes an afkamina l'halacha. What's the shir of Toch Kedei Dibur? Or is it the shir of Toch Kedei Dibur? Is the response of Talmid L'Rav? Is that Shalom Alecha Rabbi or is it Shalom Alecha Rabbi or Mori? The Rambam learns that Shalom Alecha Rabbi Umori. Many are mitzayin this to be the mocker of the Rambam. The problem is it doesn't seem to prove anything. Because in the context of Eliyahu calling him Rabbi and the relationship hasn't been established, you need to be one-upmanship there in order to establish the relationship. Well, you can call me Rabbi, I'll call you Rabbi Umori. But maybe under normal circumstances, if the Rebbe says to you, Shalom Aleichem, it doesn't say Shalom Aleichem Rabbi. Which maybe is a nice way to greet a Talmud. Shalom Aleichem Rabbi. Anyway, in normal circumstances, you wouldn't have to say Shalom Aleichem Rabbi Umori. And it's interesting how there's all kinds of halachic implications out of sugyas here that don't strike you immediately as being nogea. Now, as soon as the relationship was established, this is a fascinating thing, as soon as the relationship was established, Rabbi Yossi was no longer Rabbi, he became Bini. V'amarli Bini, mipnei ma nichnasta l'churva, so why did you go into this churva? Amarti lo lehitpalel? Amarli, ayalacha lehitpalel baderech? Why didn't you daven outside? Amarti lo lach. You daven outside. That would be as stupid as davening in an airplane where people are walking back and forth. You can't daven like that. So he said, well, would have been better to use the tefillah k'tzara. We'll see later on there's a special tefillah, which is a condensed version of the Shemoneh Esrei that takes about a minute to say. That's the Havineinu tefillah. And you should use that. That way you wouldn't have to worry about the stewardite. And you also wouldn't have had to go on into the churva. That way you could have been yotzei both things. At that moment, said Rabbi Yossi, I immediately picked up three dinim. First of all, I learned that it's okay to daven outside. But the third thing was, that if you're going to do such a thing, you certainly don't attempt to sit there and say, oh, normal tefillah with your kaddishim and your this and that. And that's not how you daven. So, now, the story continues. Why is this nogei our sugya? Because in the next piece, v'amarli b'ni, ma kol shamata v'churva, so what did you hear when you were davening? Because I'll bet you heard something when you went into the churva of Yerushalayim. V'amarti lo, shamati bat kol shemenahemet ki onavi omeret. I heard the bat kol that was sort of cooing like a pigeon. And it sure doesn't sound like roaring like a lion, and which says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was shoei ka'aryei. Which was what the Pasuk said earlier. Now there's a number of different approaches to that. Why did he hear Menahemet Kiyona? Well, the simplest approach, and probably the correct one, is because he didn't hear the Shaga. He heard the bat call of the Shaga, which is only generated in the same way an echo is generated. So it's a very weak reflection of the Shaga, because he wasn't a Navi, and he wasn't Mishtamish with Ruach HaKodesh, as Gemara Chagiga said. The next level down is there's an Indian of bat call where you could sense a reflection of what you would have had through true Ruach HaKodesh. And so, in his vision, all he heard was Benahemet Yonah. However, al pi Kabbalah, there are differences. What happens is that at the time of the Laila, you have the Anhagas HaDin. And in Din, you have Shaga Karyei. But when you have Zvanim of Rachamim, it's on, so it's Benahemet Yonah, which are essentially expression of love, not of Din. It's our simon of of monogamous marriage in the bird's family. So this is an expression of love that he sensed. ואומרת, אוי לבנים שבעוונותיהם החרפתי את ביתי, ושרפתי את החלי והגליתים לבין אומות. ואמר לי, אני לא טוב מחייך וחיי ראשך לא שעזור בלבד, אומרת כך. It's not only that you stumbled at a unique moment in which HaKadosh Baruch Hu was talking about you, אלא בכל יום ויום. שלוש פעמים אומרת כך. Again, this is one of those three times. If the three times are kedeged the mishmarot balayla, then we have a right to say that there's a continuation of the previous sugya. He's telling me the din of mishmarot b'yom as well. From the continuation, there's some who claim that the shalosh pa'amim b'yom is a reference to tfilot only and not to mishmarot. Of course, I should hope so. Otherwise, all of those people in Finland, keeping Shabbos when it's not Shabbos, and that would be terrible. Or the ones who are keeping chol, we should be really keeping Shabbos. And there's clearly time zones, you know. Obviously. I mean, what do you think? Only Yerushalayim Shabbat was before the Gnegit Yerushalayim Shabbat? What? And not Sydney? And not Helsinki? No, not really. And what about if you're in Tel Aviv or you're in the Golan? And what about, according to Ramesha, if you're on the top of a tall building and on the floor of a tall building? In one part of Shabbos and the other part it's not Shabbos. So then there also has to be big buildings in Yerushalayim Shomal. Obviously it's not a very serious problem. nobody ever suggested that there was such a thing as objective time in the Shemayim. Obviously the concept of time is a local relationship to time, whatever that is for you. And that's the world that you're relating to. There's no specific world in which one time is more valuable as opposed to another time. The nature of Bria is defined by Nivroyim. It's not defined by Borim. Mm-hmm. That's what Bria means.
So there is a time.
The time zone that you relate to. I mean, that's what Shemayim is. There's no real Shemayim. Shemayim is part of Bria as well. There's no Bria. There's no Shemayim. The nature of Shemayim is that it's an expression of that which provides for the presence of Adam with Anhaga of Adam. It's on its own. Whatever the point of the cosmos, it certainly isn't for God. It doesn't add anything to existence. So its existence is itself, not something that's posited by something outside. So existence is itself, and by definition, all of its relationships are relativistic. Have to be. What else could it mean? It's the same thing as the experience of your personal life as a now. What would that? Try to communicate that idea to a being that doesn't live within your universe. Forget about the problem of defining time. I mean, that, in the relativistic sense, you know, it'd be impossible to say. He'd ask you how old you are. What would that mean? But the question, how could you possibly explain how old you are? Bishlema, if you get a message from the other end of the universe and they ask how old you are, you can assume that the response you could explain in terms of how many vibrations and such a frequency of light. I mean, whatever. No, because you're going to be sharing certain basic values. You could give it in those values. But if you're not members of the same universe, how would you tell them how old you are? Furthermore, why would he even ask you how old you are? That's making a big assumption about the nature of time. Suppose he doesn't perceive time the way you do, and he perceives time the way you perceive space, Marshall. I'm going to ask you how old you are. As a matter of fact, if you tried to explain that I have a sensation of now, you would have not the slightest idea what you're talking about. What is now supposed to mean? What do you mean when you say, I am alive? Most people think I am alive is by definition a reference to now, which is a completely personal idea. So it doesn't have any objective context at all. See, Richie's falling asleep already. He's convinced he isn't alive. Or maybe he's alive at some other time. Okay, so in any event, the question is a naive question about time zones, Barakiyah. Right. Continues the Gemara. ולא זו בלבד, אלא בשעה שישראל נכנסים לבתי כנסיות ולבתי מדרשות. And it's not only three times a day, it's whenever anybody says, יהי שמי הגדול מבורך, and so on, which is Kaddish, הקדוש ברוך הוא מנענע ראשו, he sits there nodding his head and says, yeah, it's a nice idea, you know, but actually המלך שמקלסין אותו בביתו כך, it'd be nice if I could hear those good words in my own palace. But the way things stand now, it's pretty ridiculous to be hearing Yehi Shmei Rabbah Mevorach when there ain't any. Madmalo lahav shi glad banav Ve'ilehem levanim shegalu mi'al shulchan avihem. Now here's an interesting question, because it's not in Aramaic. What happened to Yeshmei Rabba Mevorach? I mean, what's the says Yeshmei HaGadol? The whole question, which Tosis brings over here about the nature of Kaddish Bichlal, first of all, does Yehei Shemei, because this is strange, Shemei is Aramaic, and HaGadol is Hebrew. So is there any specific meaning to the word Shemei? So it brings to the Mahasar Vitri that Shemei is actually Shem Yud Hei. Because since it says, Ki Yod Al Kes Yod, Milchamal Hashem Ba'amalek, that's a simon that the Shem Hashem Ein Hashem Malek, the Ein HaKisei Shalem, until Mechiyat Amalek, right? So therefore, Yehi Shem Hashem Rabbah, that there should come that point at which the Shem should become Malek. So it's a reference specifically to the breakdown of the Shem in Milchamat Amalek. So it says this, but I mean, from here it's, here it seems very clear that that's not what's going on. Because it's mashma that we're saying one thing. According to Maharaj Vitri, it would be two things. The Shmo should be Gadol, and then there should be a bracha on the Torah. Secondly, and this is one of the rare times that you find in a Rishon the word they. Usually you find a source, not they say. I mean, you know, people used to take things seriously. So if you don't say something that they say, you say, either there's a source to it, it's just nonsense, right? Here Tosfos says, you know what they say. Or he says it actually in Yeshiva language. The Velt Zok. Masha Omrim Ha'olam. So he says, you know what the Velt says about Kaddish, that supposedly it's in Aramaic, because of the fact that it's such a beautiful tefillah, so we don't want the Malachim to be Mekana. No, you know, the same thing as the Akdamot and Shavuos and so on. He says, no, I don't think that really makes sense. And the truth is, over here, there are beautiful tefillahs in Hebrew, whoever heard of such a thing. But anyway, in this Gemara, we have now a taking of the Kaddish, and it appears here in Hebrew. Tana Rabbanan, Mipnei Shelosha Devarim Einichlasim L'Churva. There's three reasons not to go into a Churva. Mipnei Chashad, Mipnei Amapolet, Mipnei Amazikim. First of all, people will immediately suspect that we know why he's tiptoeing down there for. He's probably got a girl alive in there that he made up with that she should meet him there. Or Mipnei Amapolet, or because it's dangerous. If part of it has fallen, the rest of it can fall. Or Mipnei Amazikin, that's a great place for shadim of all types to hang out in. Now, the Gemara is now troubled by the fact that we give three reasons for the same thing. If there's three reasons, there has to be circumstances in which only one of the reasons would apply. So we'd like to figure out why we need the three, and for each case, the other two wouldn't apply. Give me those cases. Ask to the Gemara, you say, Mipnei Hachshad. Why bother even mentioning Mipnei Hachshad? Baruch Atah Adim, Noyim, Hinu, Melech, Nam, Shachol, Niyem, and Moral. But typically, Mishum HaPolet. Why is it not enough to be worried about its being dangerous? What do we have to get into all kinds of other concerns for? Well, there are times in which a Churva is not dangerous. In other words, you could certainly conceive of a very strong... You could certainly conceive of a case in which a very strong building had some structural damage of one part, which collapsed. The rest of it is in perfectly good shape, and I have no concerns of its falling on me. So then I have to know, nonetheless, don't go in there because of the chashad. But still, typically mishum mazikin. I mean, even if there'd be no problem of sakana, what do I have to talk about chashad for if anyway I shouldn't go in there because there's other dangers involved? It may be a haunted house. Bikshrei. He's talking about there's two people. And usually the poltergeist, they don't get two people at a time. You'll notice the only people who see such things are when they're alone. Very strange coincidence. So therefore, if you have two people, there's no problem of mazikin, and it's a new building, so it's strong. The only thing you have to worry about is kshad. I thought two people don't have to worry about kshad, because, I mean, you know, it's not going to go meet a girl with another person next to him. Well, it depends if they both made a deal. I mean, so, he betray kshad namilek, asked the Gemara, betray you pritze. If you're talking about people who are prutzim, that depends who you're with. I mean, somebody's going to feel, he doesn't know you, but he knows this guy, and I'm going to be saying on this person being your shemer. So therefore, we have to worry about chashad. So now we can imagine a case in which the only reason that is relevant is chashad. Okay. Now, then why not just mention chashad? Seems to cover all of the cases. Why do I need to know b'pnei hamapolet? What about Peshat HaMazikin? Well, we'd be talking about two people where there's no Mazikin, and they're kosher, so they're not Pritzim, and therefore there's no Peshat. Nonetheless, you can't go in because of the Sekhlan of collapse. Okay, and what about the other one? He said, Mibnei HaMazikin. Why bother mentioning Mazikin? There's always the reason of Peshat HaMapolet anyway, isn't there? No. If it's Churva Charete, then it's strong, there's no problem of collapse. If there's two people who are kosher, there's no problem of chashad. Wait a minute. If there's two people, then it's not going to be haunted, right? So then anyway, I mean, wherever there's no chashad, there's not going to be any mazikin. Ah, b'mekoman chashinon. I mean, if it's the shrieking hut or something like that, then you have to be chashish, because that's a place in which, I mean, everybody knows there's a long history of mazikin. V'bay tema, the truth is we go back. It's very simple. Lul b'chad. It might be cases where you have a strong building and you don't have to worry about it, and you're only one person, and the reason why chashad wouldn't apply is the kai v'dabra. Basically, you were walking through the Sahara Desert and through the
Sahara Desert.
Great. You walk through the Sahara Desert and you are, you know, with the people in your caravan, and they see you going into some churva somewhere next to a sand dune. They're not going to have a chashad that you worked things out to have a woman waiting for you in the middle of the Sahara Desert. So Isha Bedabra Lo Shkicha. It's just too difficult. At least it was before they had cell phones and things like that. Whereas Mishum Mazikin Ika. But there's still a problem. I mean, there's no reason why you shouldn't have haunters in the middle of the Sahara. And so therefore you have to be Chayish for Mazikin. Turn around, Bonner.
Have you heard the what they said?
The Oilam?
Yeah, on the Oilam. It suggests that the reason it's called a Chorva.
This was that Korva. I've heard that, yeah. Sure, this was the Korva.
I was waiting for you.
They say the reason.
But Tzvi Pesach Frank says that Rabbi Yehuda, of course, Korva is Rabbi Yehuda, of course, it was always called the Korva because it was the Korva that he was Nichnas, Rabbi Yehuda was Nichnas at all. So to remember the Korva Acham, you forgot Yerushalayim, and it's breaking into bit. That's Rabbi Yehuda, of course,
it was the Korva. Even when it's said, it's called the Korva.
That's because it was never been
built on a horror.
Okay.
In any event, it was one of the earliest pieces of information that the early tour guides. Oh, here we go. Turn it up on an Arbam Mishmarot Avi Alayla Devei Rebbe, Rebbe Natan Omer Shalosh. The question as to how many ways were Mechalik the Laila Berakia is a question that was a machlok between Rebbe and Rebbe Natan. My time at Rabbi Natan, why does Rabbi Natan insist that there's three? I mean, is that simply pulling a rabbit out of a hat here? It's a pasuk. It says, Vayavo Gid'on umeya ish asherito b'kitze ha-machane rosh ha-ashmoret ha-tichona. Now, last I heard, a tichona, Tana ain't tichona l'sheish l'faneh v'l'achareh. You can't call something the middle unless it's the middle. And therefore, there must be three, one before, one after, and Gid'on got his attack ready in the tichona. That's a very good point. So how are you going to respond to that? And as Rebbe says, there's four. How could there be four? So the thing to do is Rebbe will have to understand my tichona. It doesn't mean the middle, does it? It means in the middle. And the middle could be an extended middle. I mean, there were two mishmarot in the middle. So it's not giving you precisely when. It's just saying it wasn't one of the framing mishmarot. It was one of the middle mishmarot. So, achat mina tichona shebetichonot. Rabbi Nassim says, that's stretching it, Rabbi, that's stretching it. Miktiv tichona shebetichonot, that's not what it says. It says, rosh ha'ashmorot ha-tichona, that's the middle. So, I like my pshat. In fact, what is pushing Rabbi to say this, that there were four, my time, the Rabbi? Om Reb Zrek, Om Reb Ami, Om Reb Yishuv, and Levi. Because, otherwise you have a contradiction in the psukim and tilim. Katuv echad omer chatzot laila kum laudot lecha mishpatei tzidkecha. So David HaMelech says, I would wake up at midnight. And yet, Ketuv Echad Omer, Kodmu Einai Ashmorot, that I was one who woke up to Ashmorot before the time that you would expect me to have woken up in the morning. That must mean that midnight is two Ashmorot before the morning. Okay, so, Arba Mishmorot, Havi Alayla, otherwise, something is very inaccurate about these psukim. Rabbi Nassan says, it's not a problem. Because a mishmar, in this context, is only the amount of time of the mishmar. It's not the actual mishmar. Until what time was David HaMelech expected to sleep? if he wouldn't have been getting up early to learn Torah. He would have been expected to sleep until the third hour, at Shalosh Sha'ot. Why? Because we'll see later on in the Shir of Tefillah, or Kriyat Shema, that you have until Shalosh Sha'ot, Shekein Derech B'nei Melachim, if you talk about royal family, they would sleep as late as Shalosh Sha'ot. In that case, how many hours early was David waking up if he woke up at Chatzot? 6 hours of the remainder of the night, and 2 additional hours that he should have been sleeping in the morning, which is 8 hours. But 8 hours is 2 mishmarot, assuming that there's 3 mishmarot in the Laila, albeit separated between Chatzim Mishmar of a Yom and Chatzim Mishmar of a Laila. But he's not interested in telling you the technical mishmarot, he's interested in telling you how many hours he woke up early. It's called Mu'enai Ashmarot. I woke up 8 hours early in order to be mitpalel and learn your Torah. Shalosh Sha'ot. Yeah, the third hour. So we have Shit Delaila, Tarte Diyamama, Havelu Shtein Mishmarot. That's the equivalent of 2 mishmarot. Rav Ashi says, what are you going to be such a stickler for anyway? I mean, 1.5 isn't mishmarot. What is David supposed to say? Chatzot Laila Kum Lechala Dot Lecha Mishpatetzit Kecha. Kadmu Einai Mishmar Vechetzi. Ah, come on. I mean, a little poetic license. So 2 mishmarot are 1.5 mishmarot is just fine. You don't have to ask this as a kasha b'chlo. The Amar Rebbe Zweig Amar Rebbe Amar Rebbe Ami Amar Rebbe Yeshua Ben Levi. Since already we're on the topic of the quotes of Rebbe Ami Amar Rebbe Zweig and so on that are quoting Rebbe Yeshua Ben Levi, we might as well tell you another thing that he said, which is that Ein Omrim Bifnei Hamet Ela Divarav Shel Met. If one is standing around a niftar, one should only discuss things. Now, there's two ways of learning this. Discuss things that are relevant to the niftar, or discuss the words of the niftar. And that way, and we'll see that this depends on what we're talking about over here, is that there's two possible halachot here. By the way, I want to mention to you, fascinatingly, the Rambam brings the din of churva in Hilchot Tefillah, which is astounding. Since the pashtut of the sugya is that Yoanovi was telling him, why did you go into a churva? The passage you could say is that Rabbi Yossi knew you shouldn't go into a churva in terms of mazikin, but held that tefillah is a mitzvah and maybe would be shomerim in a mazikin. That would be the question of how to learn Eliyahu HaNavi's comment. But, I mean, Eliyahu HaNavi's actions. When it says v'shamarli ala petach, does it indeed mean v'shamarli the way those suggest that his being there was a shmir mitzvah mazikin? Or as Rashi says, no, shamarli only means himtin, which would imply there was no need for shmir. In which case he was agreeing. So when he was telling him, Ibnei Manich Nasta v'churva, the pashas of the sugya is, there's other reasons not to have gone into a sugya, into a churva. Which he immediately understood, what's he telling him? I went into the Yitpalel. I mean, obviously, went into the Yitpalel. I've been waiting for you to finish your davening. But what are you telling me? I went into the Yitpalel. I mean, there's got to be a response to Eliyahu by saying I went into the Yitpalel. In which case he held that there's an inyan of Yitpalel, kenega the reasons that he thought he understood what Eliyahu meant. But nonetheless, we shouldn't have to worry about the Yitpalel. Eliyahu HaNavi says there's other alternatives to tefillah. But the Rambam apparently understands that the issue of churva is a question of hatamata makom l'tefillah. It's not a correct place to daven, because he talks about in Hilchot Tefillah the way in which you have to prepare your heart, the way in which you prepare your body, and the way in which you prepare the environment when you're going to daven. So churva is one of the preparations. Don't be in a churva when you're coming to daven. This is we have a halacha. Don't be standing on a high place when you're daven, right? This also did not mean the Palel of the Furba. He has to be learning the sugya very, very differently from the way we just explained it. So now, getting back now to our sugya. Ein omrim bifnei hamet, omer abava parkanet. So again, there's two ways of understanding this. Ein omrim bifnei hamet means you're now within arba amot of the mate, and the problem over here is lo eg l'rash, or is the problem of kavod hamet? We'll see later on. I'm sure many of you are familiar with halacha lemaisa. For instance, you don't wear your tzitzit out in the Beit HaKvarot. Because it's as if you're laughing at the meitim, so to speak. You're saying, I don't take into consideration the advantages of being alive. I take them for granted. Right? But it's normally a person, when he's in front of a meit, should not take for granted that he's alive and just laugh at the fact that others are dead and don't have an opportunity to do mitzvot. I mean, it's absurd to act that way. So it becomes a loig l'rash. But if you're not within Arba Amut of the Meit, so then the Chorda shouldn't be a problem. However, there's another concept, which is the Bizayon of the Meit. In other words, to be acting without any responsiveness to the fact of death, but to make it appear as if it's just meaningless, then what you're doing is mizalzel in the covet of the Meis Bechlal. That's no longer important. I don't have to worry about the fact that this person's dead. He's not here anyway, so who cares? You know, maybe we should make a picnic on his tummy. Right? I mean, that's the attitude. I mean, we have him on a sentence, a zilzel of the Meis. So the question over here is exactly what is the issue. So Rabbi Amram Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi says the idea is that he can Amri. Some learn that this is dafka not to be speaking in Divrei Torah, unless those Divrei Torah have to do with the Meis. So in other words, the simple way of learning, the most learned, is that if you're saying Divrei Torah in order to come to speak about like in a hesped, so you're saying Divrei Torah, which are not directly to get the Meis, however, as a result of these Divrei Torah, you'll be able to come and say, and so-and-so in his lifetime was Mekayim very much, these did him and so on. So that would be Dvarav Shomet. Or, as some Achronim learned, Dvarav Shomet, say over Divrei Torah that the Meis himself had said, which couldn't possibly be Loi Gurash, because Tiftotav Dovavot Bekever, essentially. He's still alive in terms of the Torah that he said. Okay, that would be more of a getter of a Loi Gurash, if that's the pshat. The Yikre Amad, others say, Amar Baba Barkana Lo Amar Adal, a feel of a Divrei Torah. What we're talking about over here is the question of Zilzul Amet, not Loi Gurash. So many learn that the Nafkamina between these two approaches is what are we talking about? Is it Gela Alokha? Is it Dafke Betoch Arbamas? Even if Chutz Arbamas? Is it Chutz Arbamas? We're saying, there's an Indian here of Zilzul. Kol Shekei Mila Di Amad. The problem is Zilzul. So then for sure, if you just go ahead and keep talking about, you know, what the football scores are today, when somebody's lying dead in front of you, is a tremendous zilzal. Wait a minute, now getting back to that thing about David says that I woke up at Chatzot. Chatzot Laila, I mean, that's an awfully clear-cut moment, isn't it? Chatzot Laila, not, you know, approximately midnight. There it was exactly at midnight, I would get up. How the heck would he know exactly when midnight was, anyway? I mean, that's going to be a big sugya, which is going to take us all the way through the next stuff. But the question is it true? I thought David takes pride in the fact that he was up even early in the evening. So David, the Pagat, the Laila, Havikai, Miurta Havikai. Didn't he wake up early in the evening? Dichtiv Kadamti bin Neshef Va'ashaveh? Neshef, we're assuming, means the evening time? Wait a minute, how do you know Neshef means evening time? Maybe it means the morning or something. So, I Neshef were too, because it says, B'Neshef B'Erev Yom, so it's got to be the evening, B'Ishon Laila V'Afela. So Neshef clearly is a reference to Laila. Omer Avoshi, Omer Avach, Okikomar. What David was saying when he said Chatzot Laila Akum was simply that Me'olam Lo Avah Alay Chatzot Laila B'Shina. At midnight, you'll always find me up.
Insomniac to join the
alarm. We'll get to the alarm clock. Rabbi Zeir Amar. Rabbi Zeir says that there's two separate issues over here. Ad katzot laila hayam mitnamnem kasus mikan ve'erach hayam mitgaber ka'ari. There were two different things. In fact, when he says kadamti b'neshef ha'shaveya, but he was still sleepy. You know, so he would sort of slumber, doze for a minute, wake up. That was in the early evening. And sort of like some of the people on this table. Mitnamnem kasus. But actually, kasus is putting it a little nicely, because as the Gemara says, a horse never really sleeps. Moes b'sheina asus. You know, I mean, we don't have really a mitnamnem kasus around the table, but we have a mitnamnem. So, yeah, that's the question of Nimba. In other words, if you ask him, will he remember? Because that's the sign of mitnamnem, as opposed to real sleep.
That's true. The horses don't sleep.
That they would remember.
That the horses are mitnamnem. They don't actually, they're not completely asleep. Always a little bit aware, ready to pop up at a moment's notice. And so, David HaMelech would sleep like that until Chatzos. When he says, Chatzot Laila Akum, he doesn't mean Akum from sleeping. He means Akum from this sleepy state, and then I was strong like a lion. That's the difference.
Who sleeps 18 hours a day?
Yeah. Ravashi Amar, At Chatzot Laila, Ravashi says two different things. One is referring to the Esek in Torah. So then, at after Chatzos, but at Chatzot Laila, so Haya Osek B'Divrei Torah, when it says after Chatzos, Chatzos Laila Akum Lahodot Lecha Mishpatei Tzidkecha, that was Mikan Ve'elach B'Shirot B'Tishpachot. That was the time of Hodayat HaKadosh Baruch Hu and his writing his Tehillim and so on and so forth. So there's no contradiction between these two things. He's referring to two different things that he used to do at night. Part of it was the learning time of Torah, and the other part was his writing time of poetry and his singing and so on. Now, getting back to this Neshef idea, I mean, Neshef, I thought, clearly means morning. I'm guessing Neshef is Urta. I'll prove to you that Nefesh is morning time. Nefesh, Neshef is Safra. Dichtiv Bayakem David, Mehaneshef Viad Ha'erev. Now, what do you think that means? Mehaneshef Ad Ha'erev. Sure, it sounds to me from morning to evening. I mean, so how could you say it means from evening to evening? So it's got to be, even if you're going to tell me that maybe the point over here is that it's not Mitzafra Vad Laila. It means Mineshe Vad Erev from this evening until the next evening. There are 24 hours in which this war went on. Oh, Lord. Yachi Lichtov Mineshe Vad Aneshe from Mi'arev Vad Erev. Why would we change it from Neshef to Erev? Let me just say, from Neshef to Neshef or someone. So therefore, it's got to be that it's two different moments. So clearly, this Neshef means morning. So how do you explain the fact that you proved the Neshef be'erev yom, which Neshef means Laila? Omar Rava, look, because you're not concentrating on what the word means. Neshef means simply to move on, to be pulled away, like we have the Buka Adba, the Shaf Miduchte we had back in Chulin, right? That's the famous Buka song, the Buka Buka, with everybody. Buka Adba, the Shaf Miduchte is that was moved from its place. So the Neshef is a reference to the switchover in time. It could be a switchover of the evening to the night. Or it could be a switchover of the dawn to the day. I mean, you can use it either way. And therefore, there's Trenish Behavi. There's Nashaf Lailia, Vyati Yamama. But there's Nashaf Yamama, Vati Lailia. So that's not a problem. Am I avoiding what?
The word jump.
Jump.
And the switch being jump.
Pizza. I'm avoiding the word jump. Yeah. Because the shuf is, first of all, does not necessarily mean jump, but it doesn't necessarily have to imply a rapid change to not shuf. It's the time of change. I don't want to say that. Like Rav Yossi, you could say it's literally shekafatz, which is Rashi's lashon. But I don't think that it's part of the sugya. In any event, getting back to the other problem, I mean, now I understand that, yes, it's true that David did two different things. It says, kadmu einai ashmorot. What was that for? Lasiach b'imratecha, David says. I did that to speak about divrei Torah. Then Chatzot Laila, why did I do that? That was Lohodot. That was in order to sing Shiros V'Tishbachos. The question is, however, even though you've told me there were two points, how did he know when it was Chatzot? He says it like, wow, Chatzot Laila. V'David mi havi yada palga de laila imat. How would David know when Chatzot was? Ashta Moshe Rabbeinu lo havi yada. We know that Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't seem to know when Chatzot is. Because, I mean, he tells Paro, hey, Paro baby, around midnight. What do you mean around midnight? I mean, that's the way to say. I mean, come on. You know, David wants to make it. A person says, right there at the moment of midnight. I mean, that's what he should say. At midnight, it's all over. As the clock strikes 12, and then Paro's waiting for the boom, boom. The whole drama. You mess up the drama when you say, sometime around midnight. That's too exotic. So what's he saying? Kichatzot. But certainly God was more dramatic than that. But God's going to tell him, you know, approximately midnight. I'm not quite sure when, but, you know, maybe my watch is inaccurate. Maybe he can fake a gun. Why would HaKadosh Baruch Hu say approximately? But clearly HaKadosh Baruch Hu must have told Moshe, Bachatzot. But Moshe knew that Paro was a stickler. You know, because Paro always used to check. I mean, if one of those behemoths would have died, he would have said, coincidence. So you're telling me Chatzot. Okay, come on, Moses, baby. You tell me when it's going to be. Huh? And then Moshe's got a problem because he's not on atomic time over here. So therefore, Moshe wasn't clear. So he tells Paro, look, I don't want to get into any kind of discussions, okay? Around midnight. So he says, Chatzot. In other words, he couldn't have shown him. I'm in the sun delay. So Moshe was unable to really be reminded. So David Aviyada. That's because David had an alarm clock. David Simana Havalei, Gamer Rav Acha Babiznam, Rav Shimon Chasida, Kinor Hayatolui Lamala Mimitato Shel David. David HaMelech had a Kinor above his bed, V'kivan Shigia Chatzot Laila, and right at Chatzot, he had a Ruach Tzvonit that would come right through the opening of the window by the Kinor. It would be Noshevet Bo, and the Kinor would start to play. And David would immediately note, aha, it's Chatzot. Miyad Haya Omeid, V'yosek b'torah shahara amud ha-shachar. And so he would get up, and that way he would be yosek b'torah till the morning. It's machlokes whether this is b'derech neis, or the point over here is that, as the Gemara says, that ruach tzafon is minashevet alone only from chatzot. So he relied on this natural phenomenon. He set up the window to channel the ruach tzafon directly to his kinar. But it wasn't being semech on a nace that, you know, he would be woken up min ha-shamayim.
What happened to the dunce
bar? It's a little late today.
Halki's brain.
Yeah, right. It's a little late today, so maybe the exciting continuation of the sugya, what happened after he got up in the morning and finished his learning,
right,
that we will discuss tomorrow. Maybe, but bring your weapons with you. Obviously that would be important.
Rebbe made it.
Which one?
When the wind was up.